Hey, this is Leo for Ashlized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about the psychology of small business success. I'm going to tell you the top five errors that almost all newbie entrepreneurs make. So you want to start a small business, eh? Well, that's a very admirable goal, but also challenging to do in practice. Let's talk about how to bootstrap a small business and the many pitfalls that people fall into when they first try to do it. What I'm talking about here is not how to go work for a large corporation somewhere and do business in a big corporate environment where you have millions or billions of dollars and the structure has already been set in place. That's basically a form of management rather than real entrepreneurship. Real entrepreneurship is creating something from scratch. How do you create a small business that comes out of nowhere from scratch and is able to generate money and be self-sustaining and maybe turns into a brand and all that good stuff, right? I've watched a lot of people close to me, family members, friends, girlfriends, try to tinker and toy around with this idea of starting a business. They want to start a blog or a YouTube channel or maybe a coaching business or a yoga studio or get into some kind of art or change the world in some kind of way through business, right? They try to do this, but then they fail. And I look at them years later and I'm like, hey, you know, years are passing and nothing is happening. Why isn't your business taking off? And it's interesting to me because I study psychology, I'm fascinated by it, is I just like to look and just see, I'm kind of curious, you know, what's going on? What's the psychology behind it that's creating the failure or the lack of success? And when I look at them and I talk to them and I kind of interview them and ask a couple of questions here and there, and I try to maybe give them some tips, immediately I can start to see why, oh yeah, I'll quit. That's why it's not working for them, because they have no chance. They really have no chance given their psychology. The psychology they're bringing into business is preventing them from ever succeeding. Like, they're so far off, they're not even close. They're missing it by miles, not by inches. And what's really sad is that they don't even understand what's going on. And it's difficult to teach it to them, right? So that's what I want to do in this episode is to get at the root of that, just in case you're in that situation. And if you're new to business, if this is the first time you've ever started a business, then all of this will apply to you many, many times over. On a big picture level, what I want you to understand is that business is psychologically very tricky. It's very counterintuitive. If you, as just a kind of a normal person who's just worked a regular job your whole life, decides to come up with a business idea one day and then to actually get that business idea off the ground and flying and actually working and generating some cash flow, you come into it with all these ideas, these naive ideas about how business is supposed to work. And very rudely, you're awakened to the fact that many, many, many of your ideas are just flat out wrong and will never, ever work. Because what's intuitive to you is not what actually works in the marketplace. So let's talk about these errors. One by one, I'll give you the five errors as we go forward. So error number one, and this is perhaps the most practical reason why people fail at business, is because you're not practical enough about the marketplace realities. That's your problem. When you first come up with a business idea, you're pie in the sky. And most business people who are new, they stay pie in the sky forever. And of course, that can't work. They're not quantitative enough, right? It's like they're not looking out for the dollars and cents, and they're not looking out for how this idea will actually work in the marketplace, how it will sell, who will buy it, how much they will pay for it, will anyone even want it? Way too little attention is paid on those very mundane, boring details of business. All the person's energy, because they're excited by this business idea they have, what they commit is they commit this mistake of what I call placing all your hope on the dream product or the dream service or the dream invention or the dream project that you have. right? Like you've got this brilliant idea for something that will sell well or something that people would love to purchase or some service that would really be helpful to people out there in some segment of society, right? That's like your dream product. So you put all your attention to that, thinking that, oh, you know, if I just develop my dream product, that's it. That's what's necessary for me to succeed in business. But that's the least of your concerns. Developing your product is the least of your concerns. You're paying way too little attention to sales and marketing. Sales and marketing is like 90% of business. The hardest part of business is not creating your dream product. It's marketing it and acquiring clients. That's the hardest part of business. And newbies totally ignore this part because this part is kind of boring. This part is kind of like the stuff that you would maybe want to give out to an accountant to do for you. But this is the stuff you got to really worry about. This is the heart of business. The heart of business is getting eyeballs. Not your product. It's getting eyeballs for your product. You could have a mediocre product, but if you have eyeballs, that will be enough to make your business stay afloat. You could have a amazing dream product, but if you don't have the eyeballs, it's not going to do you much good. So what's necessary is for you to develop a strategy for getting eyeballs for your dream product. And that strategy can't be some pie in the sky strategy. It has to be a realistic, like hyper practical strategy. It has to actually work. People have to actually be willing within this strategy to ultimately pull out their wallet and hand you some cold hard cash or write you a check or swipe their credit card. And if you know how resistant you yourself are to doing that, then you can appreciate how your customers and your clients will be equally skeptical and resistant to doing that. You have to have a strategy that will, first of all, get them to even notice you, because the marketplace is a very crowded place. There's a lot of competitors. There's a lot of advertising. There's a lot of products. You know, there's millions of products these days, and they're all very cheap, and they're all generally pretty good these days. So how do you get noticed? That's your number one problem when you're bootstrapping something like a business. But then even after you get noticed, still, then there's the problem of, okay, so you have to take the eyeballs now, convert them into cold hard cash. That's a secondary problem. Still a big problem, because you can get a lot of eyeballs, but then, you know, how are you going to convert those? You have to have a very, very practical strategy. And this strategy is not something you dream up. This is something you have to test. And this is where, again, a lot of newbies go wrong, is that they do not test the engine, the heart of their business, the cash flow. They don't test that. There's kind of like what I call the cash flow engine within the business. It's like the beating heart of an organism, right? It pumps blood through the whole thing. And if that heart stops beating, the engine, it dies. You're not going anywhere. Everything comes to a screeching halt. So this cash flow engine, this is a very practical thing, and this is something that you have to discover through actual testing and implementation and experimentation. And usually what happens is that the way that a newbie goes bankrupt in business is like this. He has a brilliant idea. He works on it for a couple of years. He really develops it. Then he goes out, he puts it out there into the marketplace, and what he gets is just the chirping of crickets. There's no eyeballs. There's one or two eyeballs. Those eyeballs are impossible to convert into cold hard cash. There's no cash flow. He didn't test his engine. He put all his attention into the dream idea. Didn't test the cash flow engine. And usually that's where the whole project ends. But for some tenacious people, they're not willing to stop there. So what they do is they keep going, they iterate, they start to look for what the cash flow engine might be, and they start to test different cash flow engine ideas until ultimately they stumble upon one that actually works. In practice, what you'll discover is that the first idea you have for how you're actually going to generate cash flow within your specific niche in the marketplace, it's not going to work. It's not going to pan out. You're going to actually put it out there and you're going to see that it's just like, it's not practical. People aren't going to go for it. And at that point, you have to be flexible enough to change and to look for a cash flow model that actually does work. And that's where most people go wrong. If you're smart, you're going to test your cash flow model very early on in your business endeavors. You're not going to wait a couple of years to create your dream product. Test your business model early. Get a proof of concept of your cash flow. And when you got a little bit of proof of concept, then start building on top of that. All right, so let's go on to error number two. All of that was error number one. Just lack of practicality about marketing and about sales. So now error number two is that you're not experimental enough. To be successful in business, you have to be creative and highly clever. And what I mean here is not the artistic form of creativity. What I mean here is like the very clever, strategic form of creativity. It's the kind of creativity that's required when you and your men are on the battlefield and you are the general on this battlefield and you're going to war with a neighboring army. And when you lose, you die. And you're outnumbered 10 to 1. And what do you do in this situation? You have a battle on your hands. You can't run away. They'll just chase you down. They outnumber you 10 to 1. How do you win? Well, believe it or not, it's possible. It is possible to win. If you're a very clever and creative military strategist, you will devise a way to win even when you're outnumbered 10 to 1. That's possible. That's been done in history. You can go read the history books. Well, that's the kind of cleverness that I'm talking about here. That's what's required in business. Because when you sit down and you start to think about, okay, what kind of product or service could I create that's going to help people that are going to want to pay me money for? Your mind has to then be extremely creative in the solutions that it comes up with to the practical obstacles that will be in your way. There's always practical obstacles to selling stuff, to getting people to pay you, to get people interested in looking at your product, to get them excited about purchasing your product, and so forth, right? There's just very, very practical obstacles. So your mind has to be very persistent in its cleverness, because what's going to happen is you're going to try one solution, it's not going to work. You're going to try another solution, it's not going to work. You're going to try a third one, it's not going to work. You're going to need to try dozens of solutions, most likely, before you stumble upon one that will work. And what this requires is this requires something called requisite variety. Requisite variety. This is a very powerful concept from cybernetics. And I'm not going to be able to do it justice here. That'll have to require a whole episode on its own. But in a nutshell, what requisite variety means is that when you have a cybernetic organism, which is just basically a self-regulating organism. That's what cybernetics is. It's the study of self-regulating systems. So when you have a highly complex self-regulating system, such as you, a human being, human mind, for that system to succeed in coping with a significant challenge, it has to have more requisite variety than the challenge that's presented to it. So what that really means is that you have to be more clever and more flexible and more adaptable than your problems. And this is so true in business, right? Because what you're going to face, you're going to face problem after problem after problem after problem. And some of the problems you face are going to be very clever problems. Not clever in the human sense where, you know, a human can be clever because we can sit there and we can think of stuff. So your problem is, doesn't have human consciousness. It's not actually clever. But it's clever in the sense that it requires a clever solution. What most people do is they don't have enough requisite variety. They don't have like a bag of tricks, right? They usually come in and they've got like one or two tricks. Whereas what's required for the solution, because you're facing a challenge that's very complex and it's very nuanced. And you come in there with just like a couple of tools, right? You need a lot more tools, a lot more requisite variety, a lot more cleverness in order to solve this nuanced challenge that will be facing you, right? What does this mean? Well, it means like, you know, if I want to start a new car company, I would face all sorts of practical obstacles. How would I get the financing? How would I compete in an already crowded marketplace? What about government regulation? What about environmental laws? What about, you know, all these sorts of problems would come up. And I would need to be clever enough and flexible enough in my approach to dealing with every one of these very nuanced, complex, subtle challenges. In even more nuanced and an even more flexible way, right? You need to have more nuance than your problems. And most people, their thinking is so black and white and their bag of tricks is so small that they exhaust their little bag of tricks very quickly. And what happens is that your challenges end up outsmarting you. You see, you need to be smarter than the challenges. Fundamentally, what this means with your specific business idea is that you need to find a unique angle into a niche within your marketplace. What is going to be your unique angle that's different from all the other businesses out there? What's going to be your leverage point, your point of power? What's going to be the thing that you're using to generate power? Because business is about power, right? Money, power, visibility in the marketplace, these are all sort of synonymous within business. So what's going to be your unique leverage point there? Is it going to be because your product is the most cheapest? Is it going to be because your product is the highest quality? Is it going to be because your product offers some unique, clever, patented feature that nobody else has? Is it going to be because you're first to the marketplace in a totally new marketplace where there are no alternatives yet? Or maybe it's going to be a combination of these, or maybe it's going to be something else I haven't even mentioned yet, right? But you got to find that unique leverage point. Maybe it's going to be the personality that you bring to the business. Maybe it's going to be your unique point of view on life or your unique life experience that you bring to the business. Like, for example, with Actualize.org, one of my leverage points is that I bring my personality into it, right? So it's me. There's a lot of people doing self-help advice. A lot of them are way more successful than me, have way more money than me, and have more knowledge than me. And so, you know, how do I compete in that? Well, it's the style that I bring. The style is something that is very difficult for other people to copy, because if they copied my style, first of all, it would be kind of like being second to the party. Second of all, it wouldn't be true and authentic to them. So they couldn't sustain it, right? So my style. Now, my style, there's nothing super special about my style. My style will resonate with some of you, and then with others, it won't resonate at all, right? But those that it does resonate with, then it works, right? So my style, and I try to strategize about that. It doesn't just happen by chance. Like, I really think about the style. What are the things that define my style and my brand of self-improvement advice? Right? There's something there, and it takes years to think about it and to articulate it. It's not easy to articulate. This is very subtle stuff. So this is just kind of an example I'm giving you from my life. But anyways, you gotta find your unique leverage point, and then you gotta discover that cash flow engine. What's gonna be the actual mechanism by which cash flow is generated so that you have enough funds to then propel and perpetuate all the business activities that you're going to be doing in the years to come. You got to see business as like a research project or as evolution. So when like serious scientists do research, or if you think about how evolution works, how natural selection works, what you see in that process is that there's a lot of trial and error going on. A lot of trial and error and a lot of failure. And that's what's going to be happening with you when you are going through this evolution process or this research process to develop your cash flow engine and your business, right? So you have to have a high tolerance for failure. And you always have to keep in mind that all you require is just one success. You don't need a million successes. You just need one. So as you're going out there and you're applying requisite variety and you're trying all this different stuff out, the process of trial and error is happening. And you're just looking for that one thing that actually clicks and it works. And then when you find that, then you stick to it. You focus on it. You don't deviate. You don't let yourself get distracted. And then you bring that home and you start to earn money off of it. All right, so let's move on to error number three. Error number three is not taking enough action. Not taking enough action. This is a very simple error, but it's very deadly. And this is what I see in most of the people that I know who have tried to start businesses, like friends and family members and stuff, is that they're just not taking enough action. Their pace is way too slow. They have some kind of idea, but then they're not like really going to work on that idea the next morning. The idea just kind of floats around in the back of their minds, like, oh yeah, you know, I'd like to start this kind of business, or wouldn't it be cool if I could just kind of like work for myself and be self-employed and da-da-da-da, you know. It's like these very, very loosey-goosey type of ideas. Very successful people have something called a rapid speed of implementation. That means when they get an idea, they go to work implementing that idea very quickly. They don't sit around and wait for weeks or for months or for years to go by. They get to work. They get to work immediately. When I had the first idea to start my original business, not actually, but before that, my internet marketing business, that business, I had the idea and I was like online, already starting to look and research and already starting to like implement stuff that same day. It didn't take 5 years for it to get off the ground. It took like, I mean, I was already experimenting with stuff. Like, it was funny, like within 5 weeks I had stuff, you know, I had tangible stuff to show. I was already testing for cash flow. And within 5 months, the business was already earning enough money for me to quit my job. Five months. Most people I know, if I ask them, hey, you know, what are you doing? They're like, oh yeah, I'm working on my business. I come back to them 5 months later. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm still working on that business plan. For 5 months, you're working on a fucking business plan? This is ridiculous. In 5 months, you should already have implemented everything and tried out 10 different business plans. And you should be able to tell me which one of those generates money and which one doesn't. You're way too slow. That's because you've made a half-hearted commitment. You're not really serious and you really lack focus. This is not a life and death situation for you. For me, when I started my first business, it was a life and death situation. I mean, not literally. I was fine. I wasn't like bankrupt. I didn't need the money to pay my mortgage or else I was going to get kicked out or anything. Like, it wasn't like that. But in my mind, it felt like a life and death situation. It was very serious in my mind because I thought, like, if I don't get this right, if I don't create this business, that means all of my dreams, everything I want for my life, all of that is going down the toilet. That's literally how I was thinking. So for me, it was, it was like, I was extremely motivated. It was like, there was no option to fail. There was no option, no possible option. There was like nothing I was willing to do that wouldn't, that would have just like been too much. I was willing to do anything to make it work. And I had some very crazy ideas at the time, right? Very crazy ideas. And, man, I'm kind of surprised that it worked. But anyways, I'm also kind of not surprised because I had that kind of like full commitment. It wasn't any weak, half-hearted ass commitment the way that most people have it, right? So you start implementing, taking action, 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 action. Business is super practical, super practical. Every single day you need to be working and testing your business model. Every single day, something practical, not just sitting around and daydreaming. Error number four is lack of self-governance. Lack of self-governance. Well, this really goes to the core of the issue with why most people cannot do business. It's not because they're not clever, they're not smart, or they don't have the money or the education. It's simply because they are incapable of motivating themselves over the long term. This is a very difficult thing. Do not underestimate how emotionally difficult it is to keep yourself motivated on a project with single-minded focus over the course of months and years. This is extremely difficult. 99% of people are incapable of doing this, and this is why they work boring 9-to-5 jobs, because they are incapable of this. You're incapable of working consistently, and you're incapable of dealing with the emotions that come with self-governance. When you are working on a project of your own design with nobody there at the beginning, right? There's no employees, there's no business partners, nobody. It's just you. It's just you and your idea, and how do I get this idea lifted off the ground? Wow. All sorts of emotions will come up. Yes, it's practical. There's all these practical steps you have to do, but also it's very emotional. You have to deal with some very harsh truths as an entrepreneur. And a lot of these truths, when you first stumble upon them, they will be so harsh that they will demoralize you. You will literally be demoralized out of business. This is what happens. And you have to be very vigilant, and you have to be very persistent to make it past that. What are some harsh truths you might face as an entrepreneur? Well, the first one is going to be that a good product is not good enough. You might have an amazing product and it still doesn't sell. That can totally crush your hopes and dreams. Another thing that might demoralize you is this harsh truth that some products are simply not marketable. You might have a dream product, a brilliant invention, but it's just not marketable because it costs too much to produce, or because the timing's not right, or because whatever. You know, just because of some little niggly practical thing, this brilliant idea you have that you're really attached to, that you really love, that's been so exciting for you and been so motivating for you, now that gets cut from under your feet. Can you still keep going? Or are you going to be so demotivated and demoralized that you go back to your 9-to-5 job? Another very harsh truth of business is that competition is very fierce. It's fierce. Fierce out there. It's a real jungle. And your competitors will sometimes do nasty things to you. That can be tough to swallow. Because it's almost like, you know, business in a sense can be a zero-sum game to a certain extent. Not totally, but from a certain perspective, it can be, because sometimes you're fighting for like a position in the marketplace, and so are 1,000 or 1,000,000 other people, and only a handful of you can win that position. Not everyone gets to be number one, and not everyone gets to be number 10 even. So if number 1 through 10 make all the money in the business and everybody else doesn't, that means you're fighting for 10 slots. And if there's 10,000 people fighting for 10 slots, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people. And your chances of being one of them are very high. So that's what I mean by competition being fierce. You know, that's worse in some businesses than in others. Depends on what your marketplace is. Another very harsh truth is that you have to be willing to kill your babies, as it's called. Which means that a lot of times, you know, the reason we get into business, ideally, is not for making money. It's for turning our ideas into reality or transforming the world. So if that's the reason you got into business and you have this brilliant idea for how to transform the world or how to really, you know, change the nature of technology or change the nature of humanity or something like that, you have this brilliant idea, and then you have to say no. You have to say, no, that's not going to work. That's not practical. It's not realistic. Or I can't do that yet. I don't have the experience yet. Maybe in 10 years, maybe in 20 years I can do that, but not now. And you got to set that aside. And that can be very emotionally difficult, because this is the whole reason you got into business. I mean, if you set this aside, why am I doing business in the first place, you might say. And that's something you're going to have to work through, right? All these emotional blocks you have to work through, because there's no way you're going to do business for any extended period of time and not face any of these issues that I'm talking about right here, right? This is going to be recurring stuff. These are themes in business that keep coming up, psychological themes. Another psychological theme, speaking of which, is being lonely. Starting a business is very lonely. It's very isolating because you're sitting there. It's just you and your ideas. Your ideas are so vague and abstract at first that you can't even articulate them to yourself yet, let alone other people. So you can't convince others yet to help you because it's just you and your vague ideas. You got to clarify and develop and build a whole foundation before you can bring people along, right? So it's just basically you. You're sitting there. It's lonely. Nobody understands you. Your wife doesn't understand you. Your husband doesn't understand you. Your boyfriend or girlfriend, they don't understand you. Your children don't understand you. Almost nobody does, right? Because you're just sitting there. You're spending long hours late into the night thinking about this, calculating the numbers, thinking about practical problems and strategies and being creative and all this. And it's just you, you and you, you and your thoughts, you and your monkey mind, you and all your doubts, you and all your fears, you and all your worries about money and about looking stupid and about failure and about how difficult it's going to be and all this stuff, all these fears, all your inner demons, they will all come leaking out of your mind. And how well will you be able to cope with that? Most people can't. It can be very challenging. So what you will discover if you start to be an entrepreneur is that self-governance is very central to success in entrepreneurship, and that self-governance is very hard. It's a lot harder than you thought. Which is one of the reasons that CEOs and top-level executives and managers get paid the big bucks, right? Sometimes we look at a CEO or some manager and we say, oh, you know, that guy, he doesn't do the hard manual labor that someone, you know, digging a ditch would do. He's not working outside. He's not getting dirty. You know, he's just sitting in a corporate boardroom. He's not really doing anything. Well, from a certain perspective, that's true. And those guys get, you know, totally overpaid. And so there's some truth to what you're thinking there. But also what you might be failing to see is how challenging it is to be at the top where nobody governs you but yourself, where you're accountable to almost nobody but yourself. Now, that's also not totally true, because if you're a CEO in a, you know, in a big company that's a public company, you've got a lot of accountability. But still, fundamentally, the reason you get paid the big bucks is because a much higher degree of self-governance is required to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company than is required to do the 9-to-5 crappy job that you do. Even if your job involves lots of physical manual labor and it's very exhausting and challenging, that's still easier than the emotional labor that this CEO has to do, right? It's not manual labor that's the standard. It's emotional labor. And while you might be great at manual labor, you might be great at technical labor, you might even be a brilliantly creative, artistically creative person. And so you might think, well, Leo, because I have these skills, I should get paid a lot. But actually, the question boils down to, are you able to govern yourself? And are you able to withstand emotional labor? Are you a good emotional laborer? And if you are, then you will rise all the way to the top. And if you're not, then you will stay stuck and frustrated at the bottom or somewhere in the middle for the rest of your life. And this is not a fixed quality, right? Self-governance is developable, and emotional labor is also something you can develop. The ability to cope with it, to manage it, to kind of maneuver around it. In fact, you found one of the greatest sources for that right here. Actualize.org is geared, everything I talk about is all geared towards developing more self-governance and showing you how to deal with massive doses of emotional labor that you would never, ever, ever be able to grapple with on your own, right? So if you're trying to develop self-governance and you lack it right now and you have some big ideas for business and you see that you need more self-governance, well, that's something you can cultivate. So just stay with me and you'll cultivate more and more of that. Let me give you an example of a really harsh truth about business. This is something, you know, I love to philosophize sometimes I can go into very deep territory in my own mind when I start to think about, like, what is business really? You know, what's going on in business? Why is it so challenging? And one thing I realized lately is that I was just thinking, like, what is business on a high level? Like, what is business ultimately? And I started thinking back towards, you know, history and thousands of years ago and civilization and evolution. I was thinking about all this stuff, and I look at it, and from a very, very big picture point of view, what I realize is that business is basically a toned down form of rape and pillage. That's what it is. So if you think back 100,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago, before the advent of civilizations and agriculture, what did we have? We had like little tribes of people, 100, 200, 500 people, you know, living just around the land. They would move around, they would scavenge, and they would hunt some pack animals like deer or like buffalo or something like that. And maybe they would harvest some berries here and there, or maybe they would grow one or two crops. Like, it was very, very low tech. So that's how you survived. There was no business. There was no corporate structures. But then what happened? One tribe got the bright idea that, hey, wouldn't it be easier to go over there and we could murder and pillage the neighboring tribe? That means we don't have to work to do all the hard manual labor of, you know, finding food and growing it and harvesting it and preparing it. We can just steal and take everything that they have over there. All we need is more power, more force. Let's see, do we have more force? If we don't, let's go gather enough force so that we can do it, right? And so this is a part of evolution, right? So this is a more advanced way of survival, also more ruthless, more bloody way of survival. But anyway, so this tribe gets enough power and it goes and it conquers that tribe over there. Then they have even more power and they go conquer the other tribe and they get even more power and they conquer the other tribe. And they just do that. And they do that back and forth for thousands of years. And that's what early human civilization was all about. It was about this. And what if you take a look at how civilization has been developing and evolving over the last couple thousand years, what you clearly see is that we're arising out of this kind of like very dark, very brutal, very bloody, to a more tame version of that, more and more tame. Basically, in order to create a civilization, kind of a peaceful civilization, we need to move away from this sort of brutalistic, just conquering and dominating our neighbors. But not totally. We don't want to totally move away from that because we're selfish and because we want an easy form of survival. We don't really want to work hard. So we kind of move away from it, but also we don't fully move away from it. And so where we are right now in business is that current business, you got to realize that it's a substitute for murdering and raping each other. That's really what it is. And it's held in place by these various forces and institutions and rules that have been developed over the last couple thousand years. You know, the Constitution, legal codes, moral codes, the various military powers came into play. So all of these forces came into play, and basically they've contained rape and pillage into a more manageable form so that it's not as outrageous and as bloody and ruthless and like horrific as it was 100,000 years ago. So it's being contained, right? It's being contained and it's kind of being sugar-coated and it's being made kind of like, we're kind of rounding out the edges so that it's kind of like nice and cute and not too harmful. But it's still pretty harmful. It's still pretty harmful. And that's not something that I hold against it. That's just part of the evolutionary process. In fact, if you take a look at what business is now, how we survive today, because today we survive through business. We don't survive by killing neighboring tribes, right? We survive mostly through business. That's why government, what does government mostly care about? Economy, the economy. It's the economy, stupid. That's what presidents, that's what congressmen mostly spend their time worrying about. How do you make sure that people are economically satisfied? Because if they're not, they're going to kick you out of office. Why? Because economics is directly tied to your survival. That's how you survive in the modern era, right? But we haven't, we've totally forgot, because we're so disconnected from history, we've totally forgot that just 10,000 years ago, if you were living, you know, your survival would have been a life and death thing. And there were no institutions. There were no benevolent military powers. There was not the UN. There were no treaties. There were no sovereign borders. There were no nations or countries. You know, there were no judges. There was no constitution. There was no law. There was nothing. It was complete anarchy. So, you know, whoever had the power set the rules. But over time, see, we've been evolving. So the survival process over time, it's kind of becoming nicer, you might say. Nicer and nicer and nicer. But it hasn't reached its final point. Now, maybe in 10,000 years, it'll be very nice and we won't really harm people. But the reality is that today in business, a lot of businesses do a lot of harm. But still, put that into perspective, and it's a lot less harm than would have been done 10,000 years ago, where they would have just come and wiped out your entire city. So why am I talking about all this? Well, because it puts things into a little bit of perspective for you, so that when you get inside of a marketplace and you're like, hey, I have this brilliant idea for how to transform the world, and, you know, I'm a dreamer and I have these great dreams. Well, understand what you're entering into. You're entering the fucking jungle. 10,000 years ago, you and your family and maybe your entire village and maybe your entire city would have been burned and fucking raped as corpses, right? That's the environment that you're really entering into, except now it's been really pacified and it's been kind of nicified by a lot of rules and, you know, thousands of years of bloodshed have now led to something that's a little bit more civilized, but still not totally civilized. So think about now the effort you got to put into it. You got to treat this with a lot more respect and seriousness than you currently do. Because if you just think you're entering business, just, oh yeah, I'm just going to start a business. How the fuck are you going to be competitive when you've got some motherfuckers out there who are like dictators, right? They are running their business like a fucking dictatorship, and they are willing to slit every throat on their path to materialistic success. How are you going to compete with those people? Your little pie in the sky ideas are going to be no match for that. No match, right? You have to be extremely pragmatic in how you deal with some of these larger forces that are out there, right? And you got to really be serious. If you want your ideas to become reality and to not just remain fantasies for the rest of your life, you got to be very serious and very practical. You got to get very sober about how you go about thinking these ideas up and the actions and the preparations you make for realizing them, right? You got to be very, very serious about this, because there's people out there for whom business is life and death. Life and death. Even now, even today, go look at a third world country. There are many third world countries nowadays where, you know, they have access to the internet, they have access to cell phones, but still for many of them, their job or having a business is life and death. It's not like it is for you if you're living in some cushy first world country where it's like, yeah, you know, if I don't succeed at this business, then that just means that I get to go back to my cushy old job. It's not like that for millions of people. For millions of people, for them to create a business, that means the difference between their family being alive and dying. So think about how much more motivated those people are than you. You know, if some guy is barely keeping his family and his children alive in some third world country, think about how hard he's willing to work to start a business. You have to be willing to work just as hard as he is. It has to be that serious for you. So I'm not trying to be overly negative. I know this sounds kind of pessimistic, but I'm trying to just give you a dose of sober reality. Because I think the number one problem with new entrepreneurs is that they're way too starry-eyed, way too naive about how these things work. And that's why they ultimately fail. Those are the four main errors. There's one more that I will give you, but first what I want to do is I want to give you the action steps. What are the action steps for avoiding these errors and for starting a successful business? Well, here they are in outline. Firstly, do tons of research. Learn your marketplace. Become a master of your marketplace. Not in the sense that you're a master of it financially or that you have the best business in that marketplace. I mean intellectually. Learn everything there is to know about your customers, your clients, your competitors' customers, how they think, what they want, what their problems are. Really research that, right? Become totally engrossed in it so that you know your marketplace better than anybody else. Even if there's a company out there who's doing way more business than you, how do you beat them? By learning more about the marketplace than them. Because I guarantee you that chances are that they probably are not as serious as you could be about learning about the marketplace, because their focus is money, not learning. Your focus should be learning and research. The next action step is test, test, test. Test out any idea that you have in some little baby form, right? If you have some big idea that's going to take 5 years to create, test it out in 1 week somehow. How can you test it out in a week? Get a little proof of concept going. Test, 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 test a lot of different possibilities. When you first start, you want to go kind of broad. Then you can hone down and narrow it down towards something that actually works once you find something that works. But when you first start, instead of starting with just one idea, be very open to a whole range of ideas that might work in the marketplace. That'll get you a lot better chances of success. The next tip I'll give you is look for things that have practical value to people. Not just your dream idea, because your dream idea might not be practical to anybody but you. You might fall in love with it. Doesn't mean that people will want to look at it or buy it. Look for the actual problems that people have in their lives and then use that as a seed for new ideas that you have. You need to treat your ideas in a very disposable manner. Don't cling to any one idea. As an entrepreneur, you should be having hundreds, thousands of ideas. So your first idea is not the one you should be going with. You should be very open at first to many ideas, hundreds of ideas. Filter through those, then through a process of trial and error, discover which idea actually makes practical sense and has a match or a fit with some of the needs that people have in the marketplace. Now you're onto something that's more practical. Another tip I'll give you is prove at least one marketing avenue. So remember that point I made about how you need to have a strategy for getting eyeballs? Well, prove it. Come up with one strategy for getting eyeballs and actually prove that it gets eyeballs. And see how many eyeballs can it get you. And then take a look. Is that enough? Is that good enough to start? Of course, you can make it better, but can you even get 2 or 3 eyeballs looking at your product, looking at your service? And if you can't, go back to the drawing board and keep looking, you know, rely on requisite variety to keep looking and looking and looking until you can find that marketing avenue. The marketing avenue is even more important than your product. Next tip is to prove your cash flow. Generate at least 1 or 2 sales. Can you do that? Can you generate a sale? That's a huge proof of concept right there. If you can generate 1 sale, that means you've proven something is possible. Most people in business, they're never even able to generate a single sale. And that's why they fail. Because they weren't planning and trying to generate a sale. They were just dreaming shit up. And then they were working on their dreams. But that had nothing to do with cash flow. So prove that. And the last action step I'll give you is work on cultivating self-governance. And start taking self-governance very, very seriously. Start taking the psychology of business very seriously. Start taking your emotions very seriously. Because I guarantee you, the biggest thing holding you back from success in business is not money. It's not opportunities. It's not the economy. It's not this stuff. It's actually your own emotions. That's the biggest thing holding you back. And this action step is actually the easiest for you to follow through on because you're already here. You're already on actualize.org. Just stick with me and you'll learn a lot more about self-governance. Take action on the various things that I talk about that have nothing to do with business, right? I talk about awareness. I talk about consciousness. I talk about meditation. I talk about counterintuitive topics. I talk about some very deep philosophical topics. Take these very seriously because they all have to do with self-governance. They all have to do with mastering your own mind. And when you master your own mind and your own emotions, then everything is open to you. All possibilities become easy for you, right? It's like, man, you can go do and achieve whatever you want at that point. And until you have self-governance, and until you understand how your mind works, it's like you're trying to fight with both your arms tied behind your back. You're at a very significant disadvantage. So don't treat some of the abstract philosophical stuff that I talk about as just, you know, Leo's going off into the deep end. You know, now here comes his new age spiritual talk. Has nothing to do with me starting a business. That's something you will, at one point in your life, you will come to understand why I talk about these deeper things. And now let me give you the final error, the fifth error that entrepreneurs make. And this is a very advanced trap. Even the successful entrepreneurs, the people who have gone through and have done everything I've talked about so far, and they've aced that part, and they've created a really successful business that's generating lots of money, you think, okay, so they made it. They did it. That's it. What's left? But I guarantee you that 99% of those people, the very successful ones, they fall into the following trap because it's a very advanced trap. And this is getting lost in materialism and success. It's running a business without consciousness. It's running a business without awareness. Creating a successful business, by which I just mean it generates cash flow, that's how I define business success, that's not the real challenge. That's actually relatively easy. The real challenge is how do you stay very practical and pragmatic and quantitative, that kind of business mindset. How do you have that without losing your soul? How do you have success in business, but have a business that has a soul and isn't just a money-making machine, but something with a soul? How do you create a responsible business? Not just any business, not just a profitable business, but a visionary business. A business that is a leader. The business that shows the world what's possible in business. A business that takes this evolutionary process, this bloody process that has been going on now for thousands of years and refines it and carries it forward, doesn't continue that vile, unconscious bloodshed, but takes it up another notch in terms of consciousness. How do you do that? And the great secret there is to really believe in your cause. When you start a business, you can't just start a business like, oh yeah, you know, I think that product right there would earn me a lot of money. I'll just go do that. Or it's like, oh, you know, my dad was in this kind of business. So, you know, I'll just go and do that business too. No. The purpose of business is not to make money. The purpose of business is to promote a cause and to improve the world, to raise awareness in the world. That is the point of business. All business. I'm not just talking about my business. I'm talking about all business. There's a lot of different ways in which awareness can be raised. It could be done through technology, could be done through manufacturing, could be done through education, could be done through advice giving, could, you know. There's so many ways. There's so many ways. And the businesses that will survive in the long term are the ones that are going to be conscious businesses. Unconscious businesses will not survive in the 21st century. There's a turning point now. The 20th century was the century of kind of unconscious business. Not anymore. It really makes a difference. Whether your business is a visionary leadership business, or it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I'm just making some money. It makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference to the community, to the environment, but also it makes a huge difference to you personally. Because the kind of joy and pleasure that you imagine you will get from a very successful, rich business, that just completely pales in comparison to the kind of joy you will get when you have a sustainable business that also actually helps to improve the world in a way that is meaningful to you. Those two are in totally different leagues. Totally different leagues. And in fact, if you just start a business and all it does is focuses on maximal success and profitability, and you ignore this element of consciousness and improving the world and being a visionary, if you ignore that, you will actually become more depressed and more unfulfilled after your business succeeds than you ever were in your life. Now, that's counterintuitive. And this trap right here, man, I could name names of extremely successful people who have fallen into this trap. Very intelligent people fall into this trap, because the thing that's the key here to avoiding this trap is not smarts, and it's not practicality. It's awareness. And you know what I say, you know how I say that thinking is not awareness. Thinking is different than awareness. And awareness is something that needs to be cultivated. And many very successful business people, even though they're smart and they're successful, they lack awareness. They don't think it's important. They've discounted it. They've forgotten about it. They fall into this trap. It's the trap of materialism and success. It's the trap of spiral dynamics, stage orange. That's the trap. And that's the kind of culture we're in these days. Modern 21st century culture is stage orange, which means materialism at all costs. Except the costs of materialism ultimately becomes too high. They become too high for you to bear individually, and they become too high for us to bear collectively. So we are at a very interesting point in human civilization. It's a very interesting time to be alive. We're not really sure where it's going to go. Might go to hell in a handbasket, or it might go to very great places. And it might hinge, it just very might well hinge on what you decide to do right here, what kind of business you decide to start. The first business that I started was not a visionary business. It was not a cause I believed in. But, and it was successful. Successful, earned money. Could have kept doing it. Could have kept being very comfortable, you know, could have lived for a long time being very comfortable on that business. But, a few years in, pretty early in, I saw this problem, right? I had enough awareness to see the problem. And so I immediately made plans for how to exit that business and how to create my visionary business. And that's what actualize.org is for me. And every day I wake up, I think about, am I falling into this trap with actualize.org? Because even though actualize.org is a whole order of magnitude better than what I had before, still, there's potential for traps here. I have to be very, very vigilant about it, because this is an advanced trap. This is a trap of awareness, and I'm conscious of how little awareness I have when it comes to these things. So that means that I have to be extra aware. How do you raise awareness? Well, by noticing you don't have any at first, right? And then you kind of baby step it from there. What's really challenging in business is balancing the pragmatism that's required to create a successful, living, breathing business that can sustain itself, but also the idealism and the higher consciousness. Combining those together and balancing that out, that is extremely rare. Extremely rare. And if you can do that, you will have a level of success and fulfillment in your life that is extraordinary, because your business will be tied with growth, with expansion, with evolution, right? And you will be sort of at the forefront rather than at the back, right? Because you might say, well, Leo, what's wrong with just having a business that just earns lots of money? Well, it works for now, but that's not going to work for very long, because ultimately on the very, very big picture scale, what's happening is that consciousness is growing and it's developing, not just in individual humans, but collectively as a civilization is happening. So the shit that businesses do in the 21st century is simply going to be impossible in the 22nd century and in the 23rd. It's going to be impossible because all of civilization will have moved on. And the shit that you're trying to do now is probably shit that's been done like in the 19th and 20th centuries, and we're already in the 21st, right? So you're like the dodo bird. You're like the fucking dodo bird. And you're saying, well, Leo, why can't I just say a little stupid dodo bird? Because you're a stupid fucking dodo bird. You have no consciousness. So evolution killed you. If you want to stay alive, if you want your organization to thrive, you need to develop consciousness. That's what makes organisms thrive. Consciousness, right? Stupidity and mechanicalness, which is the opposite of awareness, is really mechanicalness. There's no more room for that. No more room for it. And it's also deeply unsatisfying to you as a human being. Because no matter how mechanical you behave, within you there's always still a core, that conscious core that is aware of your own mechanicalness and that suffers for it and that knows that there's something higher out there for you to pursue. All right, that's it. I'm done. Please click the like button for me. Post your comments down below. I do like to read them. Share this episode with a friend. And lastly, come check out my newsletter and my website right here, actualize.org. I have more content there, some exclusive stuff. I'm going to be releasing more content to my newsletter subscribers. Stay tuned for learning how to develop self-governance. If you have big ideas, if you're a dreamer, then at one point in your life, you'll come to the place where you start to say to yourself, I don't want to just be a dreamer. To be a successful dreamer, I have to actually realize some of these dreams. And how do I do that? Well, I need to grow myself first. And how do I do that? By studying how my mind works. Everything that we're doing here with actualize.org. So you're in the perfect place. So stay tuned for that. Also, check out my life purpose course, because my life purpose course is perfectly designed. It's been designed exactly for people like you. People who aren't quite clear, who haven't really articulated what a visionary business looks like to them, what they really believe in, what their cause is in life. That course is like 25 hours of the deepest stuff that I researched and have implemented in my own life that I've used to find my life purpose, and then how I use that purpose to then fuel my business, right? And how I'm using it to evolve my business. If you can get that going in your life, that's going to be so much more worthwhile for you than just having a successful business. This is what you really need to succeed, right? And the Life Purpose course is very practical. Lots of exercises and stuff that help you to figure all this stuff out. So that might be worth checking out for you. Anyways, stay tuned, stick around, and I'll see you soon with more.